If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
The Washington Beltway Media has lost its mind. Clearly, it's like an angry, vengeful child having been given the helm of a giant cargo ship at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Disaster, crash, tears, wailing, and helplessness are inevitable. But then so have many of us lost our minds, haven't we? There's someone, though, who's clear thinking, and we're going to be talking with Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics, one of the finest political analysts in the country, about media, culture, politics, the popular delusions, and the madness of crowds. You think this is all about Trump? Well, that's just too easy. And if you're listening to this, then you're not dumb livestock to be herded, are you? Trump and Biden are symptoms of something larger, a larger pathology, the collapse of the establishment. Trump was elected to kick that Washington establishment in the private parts repeatedly. And now Biden is running like an affable, gentle balloon made inexplicably of meat, like one of those parade floats being pulled by his establishment handlers ever leftward to satisfy the angry Jacobins who will eventually devour that meat balloon of Biden. They won't be satisfied after November. And so what does all this madness have to do with Chicago? Well, Chicago is suffering madness too, because more babies are being slaughtered in the never-ending street gang wars, and more virtue signaling about why, and hopes of stopping it, and tears, and prayers, and symbolic connections. And maybe let's have some theatrical personalities to come on in and tell us that maybe if we just hug each other enough, it'll stop. If you listen to the virtue signalers and the politicians being protected, it's all like the sound of hands on water, slapping the surface, as somebody panics and begins to drown. Because our babies are being killed. Like 7-year-old Natalia Jenkins. 90 people shot over the 4th of July weekend in Chicago. Then 19 shot on Monday. 11 shot on Tuesday. And the count of the dead grows and grows. According to Jeremy Gorner of the Chicago Tribune, and you've heard him here, through Sunday, homicides in 2020 had risen sharply across the city by 39%, with 353 homicides compared to 254 during the same period a year earlier. Shooting incidents with at least one victim fatally shot or injured had jumped 42% to 1,448 so far, the data shows. I worry about all those paramedics having to hold all those children. And I worry about the children and their families too, and so do you. Well, one thing you can't ignore is that it's a bloody summer in Chicago, in Atlanta, in New York, in all the Democratic-run cities. And where are those white woke walkers? You know them. The white woke walkers. You've seen them. They're in all the parades, leading it. And where's Black Lives Matter? The civil rights leader and conservative, Robert Woodson, who was in that recent film Larry Elder did on Uncle Tom, Woodson offered his thoughts to Tucker Carlson the other evening.
Our children are dying, and low-income blacks are the ones who are suffering the most in this outrage. And Black Lives Matter, they are not answering the question, then, if racism were the single culprit, why are black children and black people dying and being destroyed in institutions run by their own people? The goal of the civil rights movement was to put black folks in positions so they could improve the lot of their own people. But where are the civil rights leaders and the black caucus when statues of Frederick Douglass are being torn down? Obviously, the left has abandoned all pretense of being fighting for social justice for blacks.
Now, you might love Black Lives Matter, or let's just call them BLM, for doing some good by focusing on police violence, or you might despise them once you find out what they really stand for and that their founders are neo-Marxists. Well, you're welcome to have that fight. Go ahead, have it. It's really being had not by political writers, but by sports writers now. But what I'm interested in is this. Black babies are slaughtered in the gang wars, and so where are the white woke walkers of the left? Where are those white woke walkers when black babies are being killed by street gangs? They're nowhere. They're not bringing pressure on politics. Is it that they don't care? Oh, they tell us they care. At least they tell us that they tweet and they wring their hands and they weep on their keyboards and they slap the water and call for help. But they don't bring pressure on City Hall in Chicago or New York or Atlanta or those other cities. You ever wonder why? Because they live in rich neighborhoods like Streeterville and River North in Chicago, and in suburbs like Wilmette and Winnetka and Hinsdale and Western Springs, and so on. I'm not talking about the conservatives out there. I'm talking about the white walkers. You know, the white woke walkers, like the ones that elected Marie Newman in the Democratic primary for Congress, got rid of a moderate like Dan Lipinski. They're so woke. They're so white. They've got their hate has no home here signs, and they virtue signal, and they go to protests, and they don't say a thing about the black babies being shot. Here's the thing about white woke walkers. The woke walkers are safe. They don't live in violent neighborhoods. They don't bear any of the risk of failed decarceration and depolicing policies that Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown condemns.
There are too many violent offenders not in jail or on electronic monitoring, which no one is really monitoring.
With the violent, including shooters, released on bail or let out early, the white woke walkers support Kim Fox, Cook County State's attorney. They support Tony Preckwinkle. They support Tim Evans, the chief judge. And those three support decarceration and low bond for violent offenders. I'm not talking about nonviolent offenders. I'm talking about violent offenders. And odd, isn't it, that Mayor Lori Lightfoot endorsed Kim Fox for state's attorney, but now she sends out her police chief to condemn decarceration and bail failure, which are the Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle signature social justice warrior programs. It's odd, isn't it, that no one, at least in print, has pointed that out? You know that dead fish on the floor? The one you can smell? And I can smell it, too. And it's odd that we're supposed to ignore it. What does that tell you about journalism? You know, the white woke walkers don't have their own skin in the game. They're isolated from the violence. They don't live in Englewood. They don't live on the West Side. They don't know about the 11th District or the 7th District or 15. And other black babies are killed in the gang wars. And they're collateral damage to the politics. And there's no political reason for the woke walkers to complain, because they're waiting to take their cue from Black Lives Matter. And they just sit there and offer their hopes and prayers as children are killed. And that's politics. They put their tears on paper. They do it in the abstract. Some of them, you know, write news. Some of them make commentary on the radio. And they make soft, gentle sounds in their throats as if they care. They ask We must do something. We must do something symbolic. Do something symbolic? You make me ill. Am I being cynical? Well, I guess you could call it cynicism. I call it reality. This is what I do for a living. I've been watching this idiotic dance of dilettantes for years, and now the bill is coming due. Crappy schools. Black people trapped in them. Crime. Decarceration. Black people are the victims of the violent. And you sit out there in your Woke Walker suburb or your Woke Walker high-rise in Streeterville, and you just play your little Woke Walker game, don't you? It makes me sick. Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics has watched all this too, this dance of the dilettantes, and he's going to be here. And my buddy and co-host Jeff Carlin, the executive producer of the Rokon Show on WGN Radio, is here as always. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and a member of that newspaper's editorial board. And where are you? As the woke walkers in the suburbs signal all about their virtue, as Black Lives Matter gives big city politicians a pass on violence, and as so many young black lives are snuffed out in city after city. And where are you? As the national media, the news media, the Beltway Boys, as they cross the Rubicon, even on the news pages and so-called news programs, and hold on to that giant meat puppet floating in the sky that looks like Joe Biden. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
If you're interested in how media and politics work together, you'd want to follow the tweets of Tom Bevan, at Tom Bevan RCP, who's becoming, I think, one of America's great media critics. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Tom Bevan.
Always good to be with you, my friend.
You put out a couple tweets recently that I just thought were astounding. One was something about Netflix doing a Colin Kaepernick biopic in six parts.
Right.
Are they?
They are, and I was just made the observation that they could probably, you know, cover the topic. I mean, they're gonna do a six-part series on Colin Kaepernick's teenage years as a high school football player and his activism as a teenager. And all I was pointing out is that you could probably cover that subject, you know, thoroughly in about 6 minutes. You don't need six entire episodes of anything to cover that. So, yeah, it's just another example of how our media is in many respects just off the rails.
And clearly, Colin Kaepernick's conversion may have had something to do with his girlfriend. I remember, you know, many years ago, in past centuries ago, I was interested in a girl from Madison was at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh boy! Oh, and I know where this story's going.
She was a total lefty, you know. So I was, you know, and I didn't care about. I was ecumenical then, as and now, you know, about politics. And I put on the costumes of, you know,
you know.
Did you wear the beret?
I did not wear a beret, and I did not buy a Che T-shirt.
Che T-shirt.
But you know, I did. I think I remembered some phrases, and used them liberally to prove how sensitive I was to the struggle. But we, you know, that romance didn't last.
Imagine, John, being a young person today, whether you're in college or not, and trying to navigate the classrooms and the social media and the amount of language policing that is going on and virtue signaling. And I mean, it's gotten very, you know, I've got a college sophomore and a junior, soon to be a senior in high school. And, you know, it's a fraught thing out there. You never know, you know, what's going to, I mean, this other story that shocked me, and I'm surprised that I still get shocked. I mean, maybe I'm sort of, maybe shocked is not the right word, but still surprised by the story that the Boeing vice president of communications or head of global communications, this guy who's a veteran, resigned for an article he wrote about women in the military that was 33 years ago. He published it 33 years ago, and still that was enough to get him canceled by the you know, sort of left-wing mob. So it's an unforgiving environment out there for everybody, and especially I think for young people.
Yes, but of course young people are very quick to know what not to like, what to be afraid of liking. They are being converted slowly but inexorably in Orwellian fashion right before our eyes, which brings me to one of the topics I wanted to bring up with you. After you had seen, I was listening to the Tom Bevin show, which you can all hear on WLS on Sunday evenings or get the podcast, which I do. I was listening to the Tom Bevin show, and he had decided to watch Hamilton on the Disney Channel, and then decided the next day to read about and watch President Trump's speech from the Mount Rushmore. And I was struck, as were you, obviously, by the disconnect between the media reviews and the speech itself.
Yeah, I mean, so we did. We watched on July 3rd, and our family's a big fan of Hamilton. We saw, you know, seen the musical in Chicago and listened to the soundtrack. So we were all excited and made it a date that we were all going to gather in the family room and watch Hamilton. And we've got, you know, small kids. And so we started at around 7 o'clock. It's like 3 hours long. It lasted about 10, and we were all exhausted, went to bed. So I didn't see anything about Trump's speech. I woke up the next morning and went, as I normally do, to, you know, logged in and started reading, you know, news reports about it. And I went to the New York Times, and their lead story was that Trump had exploited culture and race to sow division. Washington Post had a story about how Trump was, you know, defending the Confederacy, promoting white supremacy, something like that. The Associated Press, the same thing. And I thought, oh my God, what in the heck did Trump do? I got to go, oh my, this sounds awful. Like, what did he do? So I went and watched clips of the speech and read the transcript. And I was stunned by how dishonest the media reporting of his speech was. I mean, you can disagree with Trump. And I would also, you know, there's a difference between, you know, opinion folks, right? Yes. Talk show hosts. And we ran some of this stuff on Real Clear Politics. You know, we had a piece by Charles Blow in the New York Times said Trump, you know, was being a white supremacist. And he's on the opinion page. That's fine. But the stories that I'm talking about were on the news front page. These were the premier news reporters for the New York Times, Annie Carney and Maggie Haberman. In the Washington Post, it was Robert Costa, who's interviewed Trump a number of times and writes a lot of their political coverage. In the AP, it was their lead political reporters. These are folks that are supposed to be, you know, reporting the news objectively. And you know, we've grown used to the fact that some of these folks are biased and that they'll slant their coverage. And but this was just, in my opinion, it was outright dishonesty in the way that they described and editorialized about his speech and his intentions and his motives and what he was doing. Because when I read that speech and the clips that I watched, you know, it seemed like Trump was trying to be, you know, very inclusive. He never mentioned the Confederacy at all.
Right.
He recounted the legacies of the four men on Mount Rushmore. He talked about all the various accomplishments and achievements by Americans that he was proposing to, you know, put in this Garden of Heroes, many of whom were African-American. He talked about, you know, us being sort of a colorblind society. I mean, there, again, even if you don't believe Trump and you think this was all for show, that's not the job of political reporters to you know, impugn his motives. They're supposed to report what he says. And in that respect, I was, that really was shocking to me because it was characterized as if it had been this defense of, you know, white supremacy and the Confederacy and all these things. And it was nowhere near any of that.
If Tom is talking about some of the news stories that were written off the speech, here's one from the Washington Post. Quote, President Trump's unyielding push to preserve Confederate symbols and the legacy of white domination, crystallized by his harsh denunciation of the racial justice movement Friday night at Mount Rushmore, has unnerved Republicans who have long enabled him, but now fear losing power and forever associating their party with racial animus. That's not an opinion piece. That's news for the right. Washington Post. And it's the insistence on conflating his speech with a defense of Confederate symbols, I think it strikes to the heart of the problem here, or problem for Trump, but a larger problem for the country, is that you have people who are telling America's story, journalists who are writing the history fresh, you know, That's what we do, basically lying about what happened.
So it's here's just the other one. Here's the other one. And this is the one that we ran on Rutherford Politics, New York Times, Annie Carney, and Maggie Haberman, as I mentioned, in their story. President Trump spent the 4th of July weekend sowing national divide, ignoring his failings on the coronavirus and vowing to fight what he branded the, quote, new far left fascism. And later down, they wrote, quote, he signaled even more clearly that he would exploit race and cultural flashpoints to stoke fear among his base of white supporters in an effort to win re-election. As he's done in the past, he resorted to exaggerated apocalyptic language in broadly tarring the nationwide protests against entrenched racism and police brutality, saying that, quote, angry mobs sought to unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities and that those seeking to deface monuments want to, quote, end America. And I will note that, you know, the sort of sleight of hand of the media in describing this is they obviously conflate the two things that, you know, the one thing Trump's talking about, which is the violent mobs that are actually tearing down statues. That is not disputable. It is, we've seen the pictures of it. They tore down a statue of Frederick Douglass the other day,
Christopher
Columbus in the harbor, Washington, Jefferson. I mean, you know, the New York Times actually wrote an editorial, had an editorial, an op-ed on their page the other day from a descendant of Thomas Jefferson saying, we should take down the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. So this is not in dispute. And then they try and conflate that with, well, you know, these protests over George Floyd and people just want, you know, racial justice and they want, you know, police brutality to end and all that. He wasn't talking about any of that. And it's very dishonest of the media to conflate those two things. And then on top of it, to say that he's doing that because he's trying to, you know, promote white supremacy, stoke fear, divide the country. You know, Rich Lowry had a really good piece in National Review talking about exactly what we're talking about right now. He felt the exact same way when he read the coverage. And you know, the title of the piece and the point of his piece was that the media is dishonestly now you know, calling patriotism, which is what Trump was talking about, with white supremacy. right? Yes. But those two things are now equal. To talk about patriotism is to be a white supremacist. And if you don't deny it,
then that's proof of your being a witch, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Well, so it also speaks to, I think, this is, let's shift to the local angle, which is Tammy Duckworth, for talking about, how far the Democratic Party has moved to the left. I mean, you had these videos of Bernie Sanders from 2016 on CNN looking up at Mount Rushmore and saying how magnificent it was and how proud it made him feel to be an American, to be in such a place, et cetera, et cetera. You've got videos of Tammy Duckworth in a parade, 4th of July parades, wishing everyone a happy 4th of July, saying that she was going to dress as Mount Rushmore next time around. And there she is on national television a couple days ago saying, on CNN no less, saying, I really do, refusing to denounce the tearing down of monuments, including George Washington, and saying, no, we really need to engage in that argument. We need to hear everybody, and we really need to take that argument seriously. And so part of this is the media, but part of it also is the left and the Democrats have really moved the window of discourse here to the point where, and the media sort of followed them along. Excuse me.
I wrote on Sunday last that if you control it from Orwell, it was about the destruction of statues and all that. But I wrote it before Trump made his speech. I didn't read his speech before I wrote it. The deadline was Friday afternoon. And if you control the past, you can control the future, is the Orwellian understanding. And clearly we're seeing that. Although I have to say, I too was accused by the Twitterati of the witch hunters of the left, of defending Confederate statues. I didn't even mention them. I was talking about Lincoln and Grant.
Right.
But it doesn't matter anymore.
No, it doesn't.
What does that tell us when it doesn't matter anymore?
Well, I mean, it tells you that there's a fundamental, and I think your column was prescient. I think actually Donald Trump was prescient when he said a couple of years ago when the whole Charlottesville thing was happening and he was talking about the monuments, he was kind of like, well, this mob act, where is this going to stop? Is it, is Jefferson next? Is Washington next? And people laughed at him. They're like, oh, you're being so dramatic. And, that'll never happen. And sure enough, it's happening. I mean, he was right. And it speaks to the idea. And then you see them going and tearing down, the Emancipation Statue of Abe Lincoln, which was paid for by, freed slaves and Frederick Douglass. And I mean, the mob does not differentiate. They do not discern. It is not about just Confederate statues. There is, I think it is broader than that. And quite frankly, the unwillingness of folks like Tammy Duckworth and Joe Biden, for that matter, and other leading lights in the Democratic Party to stand up and say, hey, this is nonsense, we've got to stop this, it's disappointing. But it kind of is, it is what it is. And without somebody putting a stop to it, it's going to continue. The other thing, this is kind of shifting gears, but it's on a similar vein, John, which is, the Black Lives Matter movement says we care about Black lives. Yeah. But, as I've been tweeting and others have been tweeting, there is now, there's been an epidemic of violence in Chicago for decades that, you just wake up and read the newspapers and you see how many kids are being shot and killed, how many African-Americans in particular are being, they're being ravaged in the city. Doesn't merit a protest, a headline, a chant, a nothing. And so there's this idea that...
Why is that? Why is that, Tom?
Because it doesn't fit with the narrative that these folks are pushing. Because if you really did think, if you really truly, truly believed that Black lives matter, all Black lives, you would be talking about what's going on in inner cities. You would be talking about single parent families. You'd be talking about the you know, abortions of African-American babies that are going on. I mean, why don't those lives matter too? I mean, why is this movement that claims to care about all Black lives confined only to the Black lives that are suffering at the hands of, you know, rogue police officers? It just doesn't, it sort of puts the lie to the idea that that's what the movement is really all about. And it's unfortunate because now would be a great time, actually, as we're seeing these babies actually, you know, getting killed in Chicago and Atlanta and other places. And we have this epidemic of gun violence that's taking place. Now would be a great time to have a national discussion about, you know what, all Black lives do matter. And so let's talk about not only police reform, but let's talk about how do we address this? How do we stop it? What are the policies that need to happen? What can we do in the immediate? Do we need to bring in the National Guard? I mean, the governor of Georgia sent in the National Guard. Why aren't we having that discussion? Why is the discussion only confined to now, you know, tearing down monuments?
Well, my response is that I read Real Clear Politics religiously, like several times a day. And I think I'd seen something there, a reference to the history of Black Lives Matter and the education of its founders, who admit on video that they are steeped in Marxism and are
right.
Trained Marxists.
Right.
And so therefore I would suggest the reason why we don't have outrage, and you've been tweeting about this, why we don't have outrage is because it doesn't fit their political strategy, which is to organize the woke, you know, the white woke walkers of the suburbs who are the donors for much of the Democratic Party. They haven't yet taken it over. They're just moving toward taking it over in the personality of Joe Biden, who's, I guess, still somewhat sentient. And they take the, and once they do, then like the Chinese Red Guard of the 60s Cultural Revolution, then they can dig up Confucius as they did in China, dig up his grave. But right now, they just want to maintain the white donor class and keep that money flowing.
But even setting that aside, John, you know, the BLM, like, is Lori Lightfoot a Marxist? Was Rahm Emanuel a Marxist? No. And so, why didn't they solve the problem? I'm not suggesting it's an easy problem. I'm not suggesting right. It's something that there's a silver bullet, excuse the expression, that's going to solve everything. But like, why wasn't it a priority for Rahm Emanuel's administration? Why wasn't it a priority for Barack Obama when he was president? It's his hometown, for God's sakes. Why isn't Tammy Duckworth giving a speech in downtown Chicago as opposed to, you know, talking about Mount Rushmore? And this is a serious question. Why don't the people who are in charge solve the problem, or at least make it a priority to solve the problem?
The reason why, I think one of the reasons why, is because part of their argument, or their whole argument, is institutional racism, right? That things are bad because of institutional racism, and then they must ignore the fact that for 80 years, Democrats have run the big cities into the ground, destroyed the Black family, set up school systems that keep minority children trapped in substandard systems, in order to feed those white woke teachers and so forth, the unions and the political apparatus of the Democratic Party. And they don't want to threaten that relationship. They're just they're like corks bobbing on the sea, and the wind is pushing them, and they're not interested in challenging their own power base, right? Otherwise, I mean, they would be.
I mean, that strikes me as a fairly cynical view, and maybe that's the truth. But
I'm sorry, I'm a Chicago political reporter.
I know, but I mean, I want to believe that Lori Lightfoot cares and that she's doing everything in her power. And, you know, she came into this thing as a disruptor. She was going to, so did Rahm for that matter. Rahm was like, I'm going to make the tough decisions. I'm going to stand up, you know, and yet after 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, however long it's been, we are no closer to solving the problem than we were. And in many ways, we might even be further away. And it's like, why? I assume the best of Lori Lightfoot. I assume the best of Rahm Emanuel. I assume they cared. I assume that they had actually do believe that Black Lives Matter and matter more than politics or their political bases or any of those things. But, you know, we're not getting anywhere. And it's so frustrating. I've lived in Chicago a long time. I grew up on the West Coast, but I consider myself a Midwesterner now. I consider Chicago my home. I think it's a great city other than the weather and the taxes, but it's a great place to live and raise a family. And, you know, it's such a frustrating thing to wake up every day and see the headlines and see and know that there are people in this city who literally cannot let their kids go outside for fear that they won't come back inside because they're going to get shot because they want to ride their bike or, you know, play ball or whatever. It's an awful way to live. And I feel for the families and want them to, you know, I want the government whose main responsibility is to keep the public safe to do their jobs, and they don't seem to be able to do it.
In this edition of the Chicago Way podcast, we're talking to Tom Bevin, president and co-founder of Real Clear Politics, and to my mind, the best media critic now, even though his site offers liberal, conservative, left, right views. It's rather ecumenical, which is refreshing. Tom has zeroed in on his tweets are just they're just excellent. One I tweeted out just a few minutes before we began to sit down for this podcast. Tom Bevin at Tom Bevin RCP tweeted, "There's only one city in America in the top 20 that has lost population over the last 10 years," and he lists New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, et cetera, et cetera. They're all doing well, except Chicago's number, the change, is in red. So that's what you're talking about, right, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I came across this stat. I forget exactly what I was doing when I was looking at it. And it just stood out to me. It's not a big change. It's you know, 0.1%. But it's the only one in the top. Everybody else is growing or has grown. In some cases, cities like, you know, Dallas and San Diego and San Antonio, Phoenix are in Houston are growing by double digits. I mean, they are booming as metropolises. We know there's been an exodus in the state of Illinois, but also in the city of Chicago as people have fled the violence and the taxes and all of that stuff. So I don't remember why I was looking that up, but it just struck me. I typically tweet because I consume a lot of media, a lot of it's political. But you know, I also go to all these websites every day of the local newspapers and come across interesting stories that are, you know, sports related or, you know, human interest stories or whatever. And anything I find that interests me, I just tweet about. And I tweet a lot about, you know, golf and football and Chicago and things like that, that I'm sure plenty of people are not interested in, but this was just an interesting thing that I found and tweeted it out. So
if you could apply your analysis, your method of analysis to Illinois and Chicago and this tweet that you mentioned where population is dropping, I would assume, I'm just assuming, that the stats that came from this tweet were generated before the violence of the George Floyd protests, the trashing of Michigan Avenue, the burning and looting of stores by, I think what we're told to say now in journalism, mostly peaceful protesters. and then because you don't want to get the rat cage on your face.
Right.
And then you know, all the murders of the children that you talked about at the beginning of the podcast. Where do you see it going for Chicago? I mean, do you see?
Oh, well,
I got a sense people are, you know, we moved back to Chicago, Tom. I live in Chicago.
Right.
I did it for a reason because I love Chicago. But when you see looting on Irving Park and Central, you know, and you have to tell your wife, honey, you don't want to go to that Walgreens because there's looting over there.
Right.
The look in my wife's eye, who loves Chicago too and moved here to live in a neighborhood with me,
right,
was rather telling. So where do you see it going?
I think cities in general are in trouble. I mean, I think you'll see an exodus from places like New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and, you know, Atlanta, because I think there and it'll be an exodus of you know, blacks and whites who are, you know, fed up with what's going on and want to live in places that are safer with better schools and all of that. So I think it's going to, I think you will see, and we've already seen some reporting. And look, some of that has to do, as I mentioned, with, for example, the state of Illinois, state of New York. I mean, some of that has to do with people have been fleeing those states for a while now over the taxes and other things. And this will just accelerate the exodus to more of the red states and the Sun Belt and places like, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina and Florida. And I mean, I think four or five of the biggest cities in the country now are in Texas. California has three, but you know, Texas is going to continue to probably boom. And so I don't know. I do think there is something to the idea that, you know, all of these cities, I wrote an article about this, I guess a couple of weeks ago now, that went through the list of the cities and how they've been under Democratic control for so long, half century or more in like every case of all the major cities in America. And it's never good when you have a one party town, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. And you've got people that are shut out of the process, shut out of the policy making, shut out of, you know, having a vested interest in coming up with common sense solutions to issues that people, you know, are looking to government to help solve. And so, I'm not sure that that's going to change or it's going to get better. It may even get worse. I don't know, but it certainly has been. I think the public at large has seen that in a new, fresh light here in the past few months.
Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics, and a kick-ass quarterback at Princeton University.
Did you say cornerback? Corner.
Did I say cornerback? I thought quarterback.
I was a quarterback in high school, yes. but I could not make the cut in college.
He was converted.
I was a defensive player in high school too, but I'll tell you what, given where I'm wondering where my $500 million contract is. Meanwhile, Chicago's stuck with who are we going to have at quarterback?
You know what? I'm just interested in the fact that before this podcast is out, you're going to see the MLS back and our beloved Chicago Fire Football Club playing with the football with the feet, which is even harder to catch a 40-yard pass with your feet. All right, Tom. Thanks for being here.
You got it. See you, man. Thank you. All right.
Love you. Bye. So, Jeff Carlin, we lost you a little bit during the Tom Bevin interview. I know you're friends with Tom. You like him. And we were texting, you know, on the side. Like, where are you, Jeff? And explain what happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, as people know, during all the pandemic stuff, John and I are recording these from our secret locations. And mine just happens to be next on the wall that's next to our neighbor's house, and they're just seeming to be doing some tuck pointing over there right now. So it was loud over here, and I would have just been drowning everybody out if I left my mic up. So,
all right, listen, I'm sorry you didn't get in, but you were
it was very, a great conversation.
It's always good to talk to him. There's so much I want to talk about with him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Biden. I planned on talking more about Biden, but, you know, there'll be plenty of time to talk about Biden. As, you know, if you think of like a thin cover, like a doll made of meat filled with air from the left, that's Biden. And he's just floating in the Macy's parade or some parade.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to get Bevin's take on if Michelle then signs up to be his vice president. She running her own. I mean, how about that for her being a VP?
I think I'll have to prod him in the column to like force him to come back to
respond. Yeah,
that'd be great. So, okay, let's get the elephant in the room. We always talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
your bleep bleep cat. Got the mutza of the month.
Yeah, well deserved.
And really, okay, I just want people to know that you don't hate me.
Oh, no. In fact, Christine, I think she submitted a nomination for it or is planning on it before it came out. So she was on board. We're all on board. He's a jerk.
Yeah, but he's still living. And he's still, I mean, of course he's living. I would suggest a death penalty for a familiar of Satan. But you know, he's still with you, and I hope you keep this podcast above his reach, because reach should exceed a cat's grasp, or what's a heaven for cats, right? For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokon Show on WGN, and of course for Tom Bevin, president and co-founder of Real Clear Politics. You can find him at Tom Bevin RCP. You should go to this site. They publish and aggregate conservative and liberal views. Charlie, our friend Charlie Lipson, has done one recently that's very good, and I recommend it highly. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist still, apparently, for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board, resident of Chicago who did not support the Confederacy, despite my lefty trolls out there trying to twist my words. This is another edition of the Chicago Way. Thanks for joining us.